Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. A familiar figure to the Pope, St. Paul, as we know. There's little he doesn't know about him. I wonder if, while on retreat, cooped up behind Vatican walls during some quiet moment, he might just wander into the Sistine Chapel and admire the way Michelangelo once painted this significant character into the great Last Judgment fresco. He might just do so, who knows? What's certain is that in a few moments I'll be taking you with me precisely to do just that. Stay tuned. And listen, if you wish, to Professor of Fine Arts Breda Ennis as she disentangles this figure for us.
Disentangling him.
Breda, you started before I did. We're talking about St. Paul, disentangling St. Paul, simply because there are a jumble of figures there on the wall of the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
The Last Judgment fresco by Michelangelo, just next to the figure of Christ the Judge, together with the Madonna. Looking at it, to the right, there's St. Peter, and you say that behind St. Peter, there's St. Paul.
Well, actually, right next to him, except that he's sort of squashed in behind St. John the Evangelist. Sometimes the figures are all mixed together. You see lots of arms and hands, etc., and you're trying to figure out, is this hand belonging to this figure or that person? So I think that happens to most people who look at the Last Judgment. You have to focus in a certain moment and just try and find the totality of a figure. So here we have Paul standing right beside St. Peter. Now, it's a smaller figure in a sense because he occupies also less space, and he's not shown in the totality of his figure, because here behind you can see a figure. He's generally shown, by the way, also in his iconographical attributes as an older man who's quite thin, wearing a long beard.
And holding a sword.
Yes, yes.
There's no sword here.
No. But I mean, here Michelangelo tries always to be minimal in everything. He's minimalist. He puts what is absolutely necessary and nothing more. You look up here, just above these figures, you have the angels who have no wings, who are carrying the attributes of crucifixion. So he didn't bother to try and put wings in there just to complicate things. So the same thing happens down here. So straight down you have St. Paul. He seems to have a larger head than St. Peter, but you only get that effect because of the fact that he's put on him a very long grey beard. And both his hands are held up. You would have imagined him to have his hands in this position if he was struck by a light when he was converted. So when he falls off his horse, he's lying on his back and his hands are up, and the hands are open towards God, this presence of God coming into his life. The figure is slightly tense. He's more tense than St. Peter, for example. St. Peter is more fluidly, completely in to what his role is already. Paul seems to be still sort of shaken by the position he finds himself in. So this is the early stage of his conversion, in a sense, too, if one thinks about it. These hands up, hands with a sense of awe, with a sense of shock, with a sense of wonder. He looks like he's stunned, to be quite frank. And Michelangelo has put on him a very beautiful red robe. This red robe would also relate to his martyrdom, because any time you see red on a martyr, you know that this is the colour of blood, the blood that's spilt for the martyrdom. So he's given him this particular kind of clothing. But also, technically speaking, he uses also this red to help divide the figures from each other as well. He's using that as a technical device, Michelangelo.
To disentangle the bodies.
Well, yeah, so it helps you to focus in on the figure of St. Paul without getting caught up too much. His body is crisscrossed by the two hands of St. Peter with the two keys. There's a lot of activity going on in that area there.
Michelangelo would have read up about
Oh, yes, definitely, yes. And then, of course, the Pope's theologian in that period when Michelangelo was painting would have given him any extra information that he needed. Now, Paul himself was imprisoned twice, and unfortunately the second time it was fatal for him because he was beheaded. And he was beheaded just on the outskirts of Rome, let's say on the Via Ostiense or Via Appia, on the way towards Ostia. And they say that when his head was severed from his body, that it bounced three times, and in this point, the three fountains sprung up. His remains are now in St. Paul's outside the walls, one of the patriarchal basilicas of the Vatican. It's nice to think also that here in Rome, we're talking here about many martyrs and saints, and it's a very nice feeling that the remains of a lot of these are here actually in Rome and quite near Rome. It makes the Sistine Chapel itself come alive in another sense. You tend to change your attitude towards the relics too. You tend to focus on the relics a little bit more than you would have maybe in the past, because we tend to just float through things in life sometimes, or we're reading about the life of, but we don't focus on to the fact that maybe down the road there is a church with the relics of these saints. In the case of St. Paul and St. Peter in particular, this is very important. You think of people coming to the Sistine and coming to the Basilica of St. Peter to see the tomb of St. Peter. You're thinking also on Peter, who is the Pope, in a sense, the first Pope. So there's this constant, wonderful recountings of epic dimensions, this Sistine Chapel.
Well, thanks there to Professor of Fine Arts, Breda Innes, who helped us disentangle the figure of St. Paul from the great Last Judgment fresco by Michelangelo. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening.